This is a continuation from last week, which was Valentine's Day. And I told you we were going to try to finish it, but I realize now it's going to be one more week, but we'll try to finish it. You know, church is funny. I remember the first time I ever went to church was quite old. I didn't go as a child. And since in the last 25 years, I've seen some of these things happen where someone sent me an email of a situation like this where a real cowboy, you know, a real cowboy, not one of these Hollywood cowboys, a real cowboy, he walked in, he had to go to this big city for something, and he's going to go to church. So he goes in this kind of high church, and you know, he's got his blue jeans on, they're clean. His denim shirt is all clean, but it's just weathered. And his hat and his boots are weathered, and even his Bible. And he comes in, he sits down, and they look at him like, you know, what are you doing here? And they get up and move away from him in the pew. They don't even sit by him. So he just, you know, he sits through it. And in the end, the preacher's in the back, and he goes out, and he asks the guy, he said, you know, it's good to have you with us. And but would you do me a favor? But before you come back next week, will you get alone and talk to God and ask him what he thinks the proper attire is for anybody to come to this church? I know people like that. You said, you making this up? No, I know some people that when the wrong kind of people came in, the wrong kind of clothes, I remember the first, let me finish this story first, all right? I'll tell you a real one. And he said, okay, I'll do that. So he leaves and comes back next week, and sure enough, he goes through it. People treat him the same way, don't have anything to do with him, move out of the way. Same thing, he's clean, doesn't smell, but it's weathered. And the preacher asked him, he says, did you do what I asked you? And he said, yes, I did. He said, well, what did God tell you? He said, I asked God what he thought about it. And he says, I really cannot help you figure out what attire to wear in that church because I've never been in there before. We had a guy attend our church in North Carolina. This is in the 90s, okay? It's a traditional church, 200-year-old church. And we had already pushed the limit just by having me play the guitar, okay? And this family that lived in our neighborhood, this guy had a ponytail that went way down his back, okay? Had three little beautiful little kids and his wife. They walked in that morning. His mom and dad go to a church, and they've been trying to get him to church, and he hadn't been to church in 30 years. But for some reason, they told him, we played a guitar over at that church. So he said, well, I think I'll go. He walks in, he's got blue jeans on with holes in them before it's popular. Okay, it wasn't really a big thing then. And tennis shoes, clean cut, but he, you know, a scraggly beard. And I'm sitting up there at the front and standing up there in front, and I'm watching everybody watching. You know, and same thing. And so I went and met with him. He never missed another service for the next 3 years. I baptized him and his family, his wife, and he always wore his blue jeans, always had a long ponytail. Right now, he's a pretty large leader of a church music department in Florida because he asked me about it. He said, what about me wearing those clothes? I said, as long as you got on some clothes, we don't care what it is. Of course, I was in a minority, but I had enough clout that they weren't going to run him off, you know. We just ain't going to, but that's the way it goes. You know, in history, church has been pretty crazy. And we see some of it right now in this epidemic. You know, I agree with Martin Luther. The church is supposed to be at our post when people are dying. We're not supposed to be hiding. You know, we're supposed to be the one out there trying to help the people that are dying. That's what he said, and he went through some hard times. But the church in general in America hasn't done that. And I just feel sorry for them. They look at us and maybe call us stupid or whatever. It doesn't really matter. I just know that one day we'll have an answer to Jesus, and he's going to say, does that mean you can't trust me? Is that what that means? And I'm not putting down on somebody who decided not to come. They can do whatever they want to do. I don't care. But I'm just saying, when we start to think through these things, the church in general, you mentioned it, and someone in the early church service that they just really appreciate that we're open. I do too. I'm glad I'm not in a position where people that could try to tell us not to open are in our presence, because by and large our congregation say we're ready to meet again after we took a break. That's a long introduction. It has nothing to do with our topic today, all right? It's about relationships, a continuation of relationships. A guy from Sweden was visiting Australia, and he pulled up in his vehicle. He had rented a vehicle, and he pulled up to the sidewalk, and two old boys from Australia were standing there. They're about like Southern Georgia people, you know, a lot of them are, aren't they? You know, they're doing more true television news stuff in Australia now than the United States is. If you don't know anything about their televisions, their news stuff, watch it. Find that on there and watch the Australian channel. They're reporting more true news in the United States than the United States is. So he pulled up there and he started speaking in Swedish. And basically what he said was, I guess it would be Danish. And he asked them, could they speak Danish? And they just looked at him like he was crazy. They didn't say anything, just stood there. So same thing. He did the same thing in French. He asked him in French, can you speak French? And they just looked at him like he was from another planet. So he did it again in Italian. He asked him, do you speak Italian? And they just looked at him, didn't say a word. And the last one was Spanish. He asked him in Spanish, says, do you speak Spanish? And they just looked at him, so he gave up and drove off. And one of the other boys that was standing there, he asked the other one, he said, you know, we should probably learn a foreign language. Another boy said, wow, that boy knows four of them and didn't do him any good whatsoever. Right? There's a lot of stuff the church says they know, doesn't do them one bit of good whatsoever. Nonsense. How they make decisions, what they do with. And one of those is relationships. I mean, it is crazy. Anyway, that's a long intro. Let's go ahead and keep going. Right? If you were not here last week, you can still pick up at least the notes from last week off the internet, and the sermon should still be up there as well, because they do kind of build on one another. The mystery of male-female relationships, a mystery. You know what a mystery is? You know what that is? You ever look at your children and just wonder, why is that way? You know, I'm not like that, and the other part's not like that. Why are they like that? You know, it goes back generations. Anyway, all right? You know, George Washington Carver, the guy who really brought the peanut to the surface, he said as a young man, he asked God, he said, God, would you reveal to me the mysteries of the universe? He said, God spoke back to him, and he said, George, that's only intended for me. Nobody can understand that but me. You can't do that. He said, well, God, if you're not going to do that, will you at least reveal to me the mystery of the peanut? He said, George, that's about your size. I'll do it. And he did. You know who George Washington Carver was, right? In the line of what he did with developing things with the peanut. It was a mystery. He said, and God chose to reveal it to me. That's what this is. And I'll give you the end of it, because it really doesn't close out today. But the mystery that Paul talks about was God uses the man and the woman relationship really to explain the mystery of Christ and the church. And that's exactly what he does. He uses it as a symbol. And that's what we're going to get to next week, finally, all right? The mystery of a male-female relationship. The only way to discuss any social evil is to get at once to the social ideal of whatever the problem is. A lot of times, you don't just say, what in the world is wrong with this? But what is right? How do you fix this mess that we have? We can all see the cultural problem that something is wrong in marriage and relationships. But no one seems to ask, what's it supposed to be like? Oh, that's just the way it is, and that's just the way it is. What is it supposed to be like? How do you go back? And nobody wants to really go back and pay the price that it really takes to find out what is it supposed to be like. So that's what we're going to look at quickly. God created human beings in the Old Testament, closes with this idea in mind. It demands something else has to come to finish this thing. You know, I feel sorry for those guys who said that, you know, we don't need the Old Testament, we only need the New Testament, because you have to have both. You can't understand the New Testament without the Old Testament, and without the New Testament, the Old Testament doesn't make a lot of sense. So you have to have both. If you didn't, God wouldn't have given them to us, right? He created human beings, and the Old Testament closes understanding something else needs to come to help us understand all that has been going on even in the Old Testament. and that is Christianity. To make sense out of what God was doing, his purposes in creation are incomplete without the work of Christ. Remember the analogy he uses? He says what? Christ is like the male in the female, in the male federation. He's the head, and the church is the bride, and one day it comes together at the marriage supper of the Lamb, and it's fulfilled. And basically, that's what he uses to show it, and he uses man and woman. He created us in his image, but the image was marred almost beyond recognition at the Garden of Eden with sin. Therefore, this truth begs that the completion of Christianity, in its completion, actually when all this comes together in the church going to be with Jesus, because what Jesus does is to reclaim that which was lost, and it was lost. And that's exactly what he calls it. He calls it what? A brand new creation. All things are old, become new. It's impossible for one to really grasp what it means to be male and female in marriage until you really, really see that marriage is meant to portray Christ and his bride, the church. That's when we really see it. And until then, we really don't get the full picture of it. When sin entered the world, the effect on our relationship was devastating. That's why it's always hard for men and women to get along. And it's a task. It's always going to be a task. Why? We're going to look at that reason. It's a description of the cursed way things are going to be while sin is still rampant in the world. And it's going to be like that until Jesus comes back. There will be dominating men and devious women. And that's it. You could sum it up. That's what we have. But we have to understand that. And then how does it flesh itself out? What happens? What happened to me, guys? Oh, there we go. It's a description of the cursed way things are going to be while sin is still in, while we still give in to sin. And that's why we live in a fleshy body. There'll be dominating men and devious women. Oh, wait, went back one, excuse me. The major point that sin is that Christianity, because it begs for the healing that Christianity brings to the relationship. Jesus did more for men and women than anything else had ever been done when he came, especially for women, how he liberated them. Now, the male-female conflict is a result of sin. It's just kind of hard to get along with male and female because we're just different, aren't we? We used to be totally different. Now, some are trying to say we are no different. But you can still tell, can't you? Because there's always one of them trying to be a man, and there's always one of them trying to be a woman. It doesn't matter if there's two women or two men. Dave Barry said a long, long time ago, he said, just think how much happier women could be if they were not constantly saying, I wonder what he's thinking. Because we don't talk. As a general rule, we don't talk as much. Isn't that right? Isn't that right, ladies? Talk to me more. Well, that's all I got. You know, I didn't use my 5,000 words today. He said, wouldn't it be easier if they could just not worry about asking that question always? He said, because the very real answer is very little. They're not thinking about very much at all. So don't be wondering always. Don't get caught up in, what is he thinking? He doesn't think a lot. And basically, we don't think as much. We don't analyze everything. Bless their heart. And you can ask them and they'll tell, and you can tell them that I told you this. It's hard to watch a movie with my two. You know why? They analyze it. I say, just watch it. It's a movie. Just watch it. Oh, well, this is, because both of them are extremely analytical. You know, real analytical. Meredith is just like a mama. She's got all these personality things down, and she's always, this is why, just let me watch the movie, all right? Don't analyze it. You don't have to do that. So we're different. I understand that. And boy, it's trying sometimes, isn't it? Nancy Blinn was at a marriage conference, and you know, if you've ever been to any of them, at one point in time, they would separate the men and have a couple sessions, you know, where they're only men and then only women, and then they come back together. On this particular one, the lady that was leading the woman side of it, she posed this question, just helping them think about how things were done, and says, how many of you ladies out there want to mother your husbands? You know what mother means, right? tell them what to do, like a mother, watch over them, do every little thing. Finally, one lady in the back raised her hand. So the leader said, she pointed a lady out. She said, "You mean to tell me you want to mother your husband?" She said, "Oh, no. I thought you said smother my husband." No. Sometimes that's what you want to do, right? You want to be scriptural and lay hands on them. Right about there. That's the way it is. There's a conflict. You have to understand that. And understand both are guilty. All right? Adam and Eve have both sinned against God in Genesis. They distrusted God's goodness and said, "We're smarter than you are, God, so we're not going to follow your guidelines. We're going to do what we think." So sin entered the picture. God held them account of it, and he told them what the curse was going to be because of the sin. And this is what he says. He says to the woman, 3:16, he says, "I will greatly multiply your pain in childbearing. In your pain you shall bring forth children, and your desire shall be for your husband, and he shall rule over you." Wow. What does that mean? What that means is the same thing you get an understanding of the word when you go to chapter 4, whenever he's talking to Cain and Abel. And this is what it means. It is a description of misery, not of a model marriage. You know, as I mentioned last week, a lot of people say all the caveman did was walk around with a big club and beat his wife up, and that's exactly what they think it was, and sometimes how they think it should be still. No, that's not right. That's not what it was. That's not what a model is supposed to be. This is the way marriage and relationships are going to be, where sin has the upper hand, or what that means is where sin controls their life. If sin controls a man's life, he's going to be a brute. If a sin controls a woman's life, she's going to be a devious woman. And we'll see how it plays itself out. There's a serious connection between these words in chapter 4, verse 7 of Cain and Abel and the words in chapter 3, verse 16. And here's what that is. It's actually, you remember Cain and Abel, for the sake of time, Cain and Abel brought their offering to God. God took Abel's and he didn't take Cain's. He says, "Cain, go back and fix this, and I'm giving you a second chance." It appears to mean God knows that Cain knew better, but he chose to bring what he could build himself instead of, how did Abel know what to bring if Cain didn't? Well, it seems to indicate he does, but he says, "If you'll go fix this, I'll accept you too." And this is what he says to him, the actually words that he uses there. He says, "Cain, be careful. Sin is crouching at the door." It's the picture of a lion, and he uses the word later. "Its desire," same word we see there in Genesis chapter 3, verse 16, "you will have a desire for your husband. It is a desire, it's for you, and you must master it. You must control it, because it can't control you." That's what he's telling him. And it's the same thing when he's talking to the woman. The words are virtually the same thing in Hebrew. He says to the woman, "Your desire is for your husband, and he shall rule over you. Sin's desire is for you, Cain, and you must rule over it." What does that mean? When we allow sin to control us, both man and woman, the marriage relationship or any relationship, is never going to be what God said it was supposed to be. It never is. The reason it's so important is to see that really what this word desire means. You know how that works in Bible study. I don't need to give you that lesson. But here, when you're trying to figure out something this serious, you don't just go where it's one place mentioned. You need to go through the whole scripture, try to find out how many times this is mentioned, how it's dealt with in the context, to come up with a principle. You can't just pull one out. That's what a lot of people do. And the main reason is they don't want to pay the price, because it takes a long time to do that. So that's why we come up with all kind of different belief systems. And that's why it's important, all right? It says that sin is crouching at the door, and that it has desire to overpower you, Cain, and make you do the wrong thing. But you must control it. You can't give in to that. It means sin wants to overpower him. It wants to defeat him and make him a slave. And he says, "No, your desire shall be for your husband." It's the same thing. You're going to want to overpower him, exploit him, and be in control over him. That's part of the curse. That's the way it is. By nature, that's the way we are. I mean, if we just admit it on both sides. It means that when sin has the upper hand in the woman, she will desire to overpower or subdue him, put him down, or exploit him. Both hands. It's not just her. And when it has the upper hand, he will respond in like manner, and he will subdue her and rule over her. Now, the nature of corruptness, how does that work? Here's how one way it works. A man is a person who, if a woman says, "Never mind, I'll do it myself," he lets her. You ever been there? You know, sometimes that happens. And a woman is a person who, if she says to the man, "Never mind, I'll do it myself," and he lets her, she gets mad. Huh? And a man is a person, if the woman says to him, "Never mind, I'll do it myself," and he lets her, and she gets mad, he says, "What are you mad about?" And the woman says, when she says to the man, "Never mind, I'll do it myself," and he lets her, and she gets mad, and he says, "What are you mad about?" And she says, "Well, if you don't know, I'm not going to tell you." How are you going to win? Both are guilty. The nature of corruptness is there. We're all corrupt. Here's how it pans itself out. The reality described here in this curse is the ugly conflict between male and female from throughout history. The nature of sin is self-reliance and self-exaltation. I want to be in first place. Things have got to go the way I want them, whether I'm right or wrong. Hello? Why is it that we fight? Because we think we're right. Why do nations fight? Because they think they're right and somebody's wrong, and it can be. I mean, I'm not saying that someone is never wrong. I don't mean that, but usually all the tension is usually when both sides think they're right. Listen, there's always about a 50% chance you're wrong. Ain't it right? Am I 50% chance that I'm wrong if I say there's 50% chance you're right or wrong? You know, people come sometimes, they'll tell me, and, you know, it's amazing, people who have never flown a plane want to go to the pilot and tell him how to fly the plane. Ain't that crazy? And then they'll come to me sometime, they're on a theological issue, and they said, "You know, you're wrong, and I'm right." I said, "Okay. Is there any chance that you're wrong?" "Oh, no, 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 no. There's no way in the world I'm wrong." I said, "There's a problem. You got a 50% chance of being wrong, and I got a 50% chance of being wrong. When you confront me, I'm going to sit down, I'm going to say, okay, I'm going to go back over. This is why I believe this, and I'm going to look at it, and I'm going to evaluate, is this right or is this wrong?" We all have that. We can always, all of us can be wrong, or we can be right. But that's it. We want to exalt ourselves. What did Eve do? "I want to be like God." That's what Satan told her, right? "Oh, Eve, your eyes aren't even open yet. God's hiding this from you. If you would just do this," she wants to be in first place. She wants to be in control. Who was supposed to be in control? Adam was. That's why God came to him. We saw that last week. The first rebellion against God and then the exploitation of each other. Lord Acton, who made this line famous, it says, "Power tends to corrupt, and absolute power corrupts absolutely." You know, he was an advisor to Gladstone, who was a prime minister, for four times. He was a Roman Catholic, but he voted against the Vatican Council making the Pope infallible in 1870, because he thought it would be the downfall of the church to give the absolute power to one person. He was right. Still right. You don't need to give the absolute power to any Baptist, because they'll muck it up. I guarantee you. Why? Because they think they have the absolute say. And then when somebody thinks they're always absolutely right, then there's no idea that they could investigate whether they're wrong or not. You see how that works? So be careful when you always say, when you say I'm right, be able to explain why you think you're right in a civil manner. "Well, I believe this, and this is why I believe this." Not just, "Well, that's what I believe." The nature of corrupted maleness is the focus on self for power and control, to subdue and exploit for selfish reasons. It's no different from the lady. Same thing. For the woman, it's the same thing. The focus on self for power and control, to subdue and exploit the man for a selfish reason. And the selfish reason is because I want my way. Whatever it is, it's the same thing. The main difference between them is found mainly in the different weaknesses that can be exploited in each other. Now, what are they? As a rule, as a general rule, if you take someone who's on a natural level, that's not pumped up on steroids or anything artificial, by and large, a man is going to be stronger than the woman. It's just the way God made us. That's not a chauvinistic statement. That's just a general rule. There are exceptions. There are some Amazons, absolutely. And they are weak men, absolutely. But as a general rule, everybody agree with that? That's just the way it is. That's the way God made it, all right? So the woman, and so they abuse and threaten them because they're bigger, they're stronger, they're threatened. He walks around with the club in the cave, and he's beating up on everybody. He says, you know, go do what I do and bring me my tea to the, what you call those chairs? Recliner. Yeah, same thing. You know, we've seen that in our lifetime, right? Not in my family, but I've seen it in some families. The dad comes home from work and thinks the rest of the house owes him everything there is. You've got to wait on him hand and foot. There was a day, actually, I remember this, not as much in my household because we didn't do it exactly that way, where all the men, if we had a gathering, guess who ate first? The men. We let children go first here. Uh-uh, not then. If you ever heard Jerry Clower tell those stories, some of that's true. You know, you're sitting there, and after the men's eating, there's one piece of chicken on the plate, and the light blows a candle out, and everybody screams, and they get the light back on, and there are five forks in the back of Uncle Versus' hand. Because everybody reached for it, and he got there first. The men ate first. It's the same thing. I mean, that's just the way, that's part of the fall. That's part of it. Women may not have as much brute strength, but there's still ways that she can subdue. What is that? Vocabulary. By and large, they talk circles around us. You know, by and large, you know, there's exceptions, absolutely. But as a general rule, their vocabulary, they learn to speak a lot quicker, they're a lot younger, they have more words, and normally all their life, as a basic rule, they'll have more vocabulary, right? That's why, guys, if you work apart from your spouse and you get home and you don't have anything to say, you've used your 5,000 words, and she's still got 25,000 left. Why? Because she's got that many, and it causes problems, right? And so why don't you say something? I'm done. I'm used up. I've done used all my words. That's just one of them. But here's the main one. If you have any kind of doubt that she doesn't have some way to exploit and subdue the man, turn on the television. Look in magazine ads. This is what you got. What do you have? A woman's body sells probably 99% of the stuff that's sold. She has nothing to do with the item that is being sold. But there is a part there, the way God's created us, the man can be exploited. And here's the sad part about it. The exploitation of women by the sinful men is conspicuous because it's often harsh. We're not going to have these guys walking around with clubs and beating up men. Oh, no, no, we'll put them in jail, and they should be. It's never right for a man to beat up a woman, you know. That's just a pansy is all that is. That's all that is. You need to go beat him up and show him not to do that kind of stuff, all right? So don't say that I say it's all right for men to beat up women. I don't. But here's the problem. We'll show you that the exploitation of men by the sinful woman is just as pervasive in our society. Why? Because our sinful society sanctions the perversity of the woman, but not the man. You say, oh, no, no, no. Just watch the advertisements, look in a magazine, and tell me that I'm not telling you the truth. That's exploiting. That's taking advantage of. Oh, one of them's brute force, and the other one doesn't have to be. But it's the same thing. It's the very same thing. And that's exactly what's going on. And a lot of times, we don't stop to think through that and say, wait a minute. Because it goes on all the time. Why? Everybody wants to be in control. Right? You're going to desire, I left him, and he's going to misuse that, so he's going to abuse, and that's how wife abuse comes, and we'll talk about that some next week, and all these horrible things, it comes from that side, but you know what? You're going to do the very same thing by the way you do it, because you want to be in control too. Everybody can't be in control. And he says, when sin controls me, then I'm going to be abusive, and when sin controls my wife, she's going to be devious. And there's no togetherness. That's what this is. Equality is only part of the answer. God created both of us equally alike. If you think of it like this, quickly, and I learned a new word today. I said, I don't really know the word for a man ballerina, but I do now. It's a ballerino. Did you know that? Because it's Italian. If you have a ballerino and a ballerina, and they're preparing for the dance, you know, I'm not a ballerina person. I know what it is. I don't go to ballerinas. What do you call those?
Ballets.
You can tell, can't you? I'm not against it. Just ain't my thing. When they both understand, they both have a part to play in that, and they understand this. They understand they're equally accomplished dancers. They look the same about their peers. Their peers look at them as both having a major part in the, and it doesn't have to be a dance. It can be anything where two people are working to get this main thing accomplished, all right? Do you know your part, and each one of them compliments each other's, and they understand when it's all over, they'll both be applauded together. They're not separated. But if that's all they know, the dance will be a flop. Why? You know, if someone is running and someone is leaping in the air, someone's got to catch them. Or what happens? A disaster. So if you don't know your particular part that you have to play, if you're the guy, you got to know where she's going to be, and you got to be ready to catch her. And if you're the girl and you're running and jumping, you have to know your individual parts so when all this thing comes together, no one gets hurt. See how that works? It's the same thing. Men and women are not the same. They don't have the same parts, and they don't play the same roles always. But we have to understand, we have to know those parts in order for the drama of our marriage and relationships to come out smooth and no one get destroyed. That's what the whole thing is. If that's all they know, it's a bad day. You know, can you imagine you're going to run and jump on a hard floor and you're depending on somebody there to catch you? And if they don't know what their spot is, what happens? Somebody gets hurt. That's the whole thing. They must know these individual parts that they play, because both of them can't play the same part. Equal in a person means that a man is not less of a person than a woman because he looks more like a gorilla. You know, he's got hair in places that ladies don't have hair. Doesn't make him any less of a person. Doesn't make her any less a person because she doesn't look like a gorilla. Thank the Lord. Right? Meredith was flipping through something one day this week, and it had two gorillas sitting there eating. And this guy was telling us what he's thinking. He's telling us what the gorilla's thinking. I said, you moron. I told Meredith that, about this guy. I said, he don't have one clue what that gorilla's thinking. What do these people say? Oh, it means this. They don't have a clue what that is. And a lot of people out there in the world trying to tell us what the problem is and how to fix it, they don't have a clue what's going on. Because they don't go back to the real thing. Oh, this ain't what marriage is. What is it supposed to be? They don't want to go back to the Bible and find it. That's too hard. They're equal in their personhood, and their differences do not change that. They're human beings. They're not animals. They're human beings. Everybody deserves some kind of decency, even criminals, even though when they do something wrong. It says what? In 1 Peter, honor all that is, all humans. They both have that. There's an honor be paid to them. Exactly. Mutual respect means that men and women should equally be zealous to respect and honor each other. I might not agree with you, but I can respect you. You know? I might not. There's a whole different ball game there. Complimenting each other means that the differences of the male and female will be respected and firm and valued. Male and female will not try to duplicate each other. It's a funny thing. In doing some marriage counseling over the last 25 years, you know what it seems to come out of some of that? We marry someone that's quite different than us and then spend half of our life trying to make them like us. Then one of us is useless. Right? You want to try to make that person just like you are. Why? You're not supposed to be that. You're not supposed to be the same. There's supposed to be two parts to it. They're not supposed to duplicate each other. We have to be careful. We're destined for an equal enjoyment of the revelation of the glory of God in the age to come. Wow. That's where we're going to stop for today. We have to understand these things. And as we'll see in just a moment or next week, when we do not teach our children about these roles, why in the world do we think we do not have a messed up society? They're not going to get it anywhere else. Where do they learn what the true role of a godly man is? Where do they learn what the true role of a godly woman is? Where do you think they're going to get that from? Not from CNN, the Communist News Network. They sure ain't going to get it there. They're not getting it from a lot of churches even. Christ has the answer, and he used Christianity to portray it. We'll finish that next week. Let's pray. Lord, thank you. Thank you that you love us. We are so different. But Lord, you've created us in a way that with your help, we can so much get along that it will be a joy and be a reflection of who you are so that the world would want to know you. Father, just remind us, we're not always right. We don't always have to be right in a relationship, that we can make mistakes. We can honestly evaluate them, see what we can do while respecting the other person. Father, thank you that you're just patient with us. Help us all evaluate where we are. How are we acting in whatever relationships we're in? Are we doing anything that would bring honor and glory to you? Are we so self-focused that we really don't care about anything else but what we think? Lord, convict us and change us so that you will be glorified. We give you the praise in Jesus' name. Amen.